And on today's show, we have one which has never been heard before. We could say that it's from the Chronicles of Dr. John Watson. But to be totally truthful, we have to tell you that it was actually ghostwritten for Watson by the talented Vancouver writer Lawrence Goff. It's called The Adventure of the Left-Handed Corpse, and it was produced in Vancouver by Robert Chesterman. We'll now take you to Baker Street in late 19th century London. Dr. Watson is returning home.
Good evening, Holmes.
And a memorable one, since I must congratulate you on your singular imperturbability.
Eh? Huh? I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, come now, Watson. Your demeanor may be calm and impassive, but you have come directly from a very narrow escape, have you not? In fact, your situation was so grave that you found it necessary to use your pistol.
Why, that's remarkable. Utterly remarkable. How did you manage to come to such an astounding conclusion?
Though my conclusions may seem to sparkle and effervesce, the process of deduction is as flat and pedestrian as last night's champagne.
Well, I'm sure. But still, I'd very much appreciate it if you'd pour me a glass.
Very well, Watson. To begin with, your tread upon the stairs was ponderous and dull. And as you entered the room, I immediately observed numerous signs of a violent physical conflict.
You are referring to the fact that I have torn my coat.
Your hair is mussed, Watson.
Oh. Oh, dear me.
There is a slight cut on your forehead, and the blood which has run from it is not yet fully congealed. The knees of your trousers and toes of your boots are smeared with the remarkably tenacious mud of London. And, yes, the collar of your coat is badly torn. I would say it was obvious that you have been set upon by a gang of ruffians.
I see. But tell me, how did you deduce that I had fired my pistol?
You invariably carry the weapon in your Gladstone bag, along with the various implements of your trade.
Yes.
I simply observe that the clasps are not fastened. This breach of security is entirely out of character, Watson, and can only have come about as a consequence of extreme stress. You were forced to draw your pistol and to use it.
An extremely plausible and colorful tale, Holmes, full of wonderfully logical deductions. But shall I tell you what actually happened?
Kindly do not toy with me, Watson.
I was on the underground. There was a mechanical failure. We had to separate one of the coaches and push it onto a siding. This happened on an exposed section of the line. The track was wet and slippery. We were warned to be extremely careful of the electric rail, but I wasn't careful enough. I lost my footing, Holmes, and I'd have been fried crisp as this morning's kipper had not the conductor clutched at my coat and pulled me to one side. That is how I ruined my clothing and bloodied my head. The conductor opened my bag in order to administer to my wound. His groping fingers closed on the trigger of my revolver, and the thing went off. Now that is why there is a faint odor of cordite in the air. So you see, my friend, you have not done very well at all.
I don't like being made a fool of, Watson. No man does.
I haven't made you a fool. All I've done is kept an accurate record of the transition.
What do you mean by that remark?
I'm talking about your increasing dependence on that hideous drug. Cocaine, Holmes.
It helps me to relax.
And cocaine is a dangerous drug.
We live in a dangerous world.
But not dangerous enough, eh?
What are you getting at?
I fear that danger itself has become a drug to you. and that in the absence of danger, you have languished and sought out a substitute narcotic.
Well, I would rather die of an overdose of pleasure than a surfeit of boredom and ennui.
Now, you listen to me, Holmes. I'm not about to stand idly by.
Careful, Watson. You are my Boswell, nothing more. It is your function to stand idly by.
I am a physician. Your physician, and I must warn you...
Come in.
I'm sorry to have to interrupt at this hour of night, Mr. Holmes, but...
I quite understand, Mrs. Hudson. You have to be up at the crack of dawn, don't you?
Yes.
And you have a responsibility to your other equally distinguished tenants. And you have mentioned the noise on various other occasions and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure you must think me the worst tenant in all of London.
No, not at all, Mr. Holmes.
Well, let me assure you that this evening's debate has ended. Dr. Watson was just about to concede defeat when you knocked.
Yes, but what I've been trying to say is it isn't the noise at all.
Then what in the world are you doing here?
There's a young lady to see you.
What does she want?
I have no idea, sir, but she's extremely pale and trembling something fierce.
You say she's trembling?
Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely beautiful she is, and in such a torment of anguish, you've no idea.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson. You've made the situation quite clear.
Shall I show her up, then?
Well, of course. One moment, Mrs. Hudson. What is this beautiful but tormented young creature's name?
Sarah Roberts. Oh, here. She's given me her card.
Thank you. Ah. What does it tell you, Holmes? That the lady comes from a good family, but is presently in financial straits and extremely distraught. Show her in, Mrs. Hudson, if you please.
Right away, Mr. Holmes.
And kindly do not drop by in 10 minutes with a nice hot pot of tea. Please sit down next to the fire, Miss Roberts.
Thank you.
Now then, are you quite comfortable?
Yes, thank you.
Warm enough? Good. Now then, pray tell us... Excuse me. This gentleman whom you see fibrillating before you is my very good friend, Dr. John Watson.
How do you do, Miss Roberts? Please excuse my appearance. I was attacked by a trio of thugs.
Oh, dear. Are you all right?
Life has never held more promise for me, I assure you.
Oh.
Now that you all know each other, perhaps you would be so kind as to tell us exactly what brings you here.
I'm worried. Terribly worried about my younger brother, Morton.
Pray continue.
We came down to London together not quite 6 months ago. We'd always been very close, but here in the city we grew even closer. Morton was in the habit of visiting me every day, Mr. Holmes, even if only for a moment, to see that I was well.
And today he failed to visit you.
I'm not quite so precipitate as that. I last saw him on Monday.
6 days ago?
Yes. Have you been to the police?
3 times. They grow more and more disinterested.
We shall have to do something about that, Holmes,
perhaps. Is there anything else?
This evening, when I returned home from the police station, I found a note pinned to my door. If I wished ever to see Morton again, I was to go to a place called the Illustrious Client.
A public house?
Next to St. Catherine Docks, I believe. Not a particularly uplifting area. Did you, by any chance, bring the note with you?
Yes, of course.
Oh, good girl. Ah.
What do you make of it, Holmes?
Very little. The paper is extremely cheap and common. And yet I would not say that is true of the ink that has been used, nor the pen. You see, Miss Roberts, the paper is hardly scored at all. This suggests free-flowing ink, and that suggests a nib of silver or gold. In any case, a According to these instructions, you are expected at the illustrious client in less than 3/4 hours.
I realize I've given you very little notice. I came by several times this afternoon, but apparently you weren't at home.
That's not quite true, Miss Roberts, but it's true enough.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
He was present in body, but not in mind.
Oh, I see.
Now then, shall we proceed? Coat, revolver, spare box of cartridges. What else do I need? Not an umbrella in this fog. Well, come along, Miss Roberts. If we hurry, we should manage to arrive just in the nick of time. I'd ask you to accompany us, Watson, but I don't imagine you've had time to recover from your attack. Disrepair. Shall I take your arm, Miss Roberts?
Thank you, Doctor.
Quite welcome. What are you looking at, Holmes?
Someone has preceded us quite recently. And they've been dragging something behind them.
A man?
Something smaller than a man.
Oh, thank heavens for that.
Oh, they ought to condemn this entire area.
The rats hereabout are as thick as fleas and as large as West Country hounds.
And would you hope to eradicate the undesirable simply by declaring the area out of bounds?
Oh, now, lift your bullseye, little Watson, and take a few steps to your left. Eh?
Oh, yes, all right. We should be upon the doorstep of the place by now. Yet, I detect no lights, no sign of life.
It's a very gloomy place. I hope that Morton is...
Over here, Holmes.
Stay well behind me, Miss Roberts. What have you found, Watson?
Our missing public house, or at least what's left of it, burned right down to the waterline, so to speak.
And not recently either. These ashes have been rained upon numerous times. Keep the lantern well to one side, please, Watson. Light the way, but not the wayfarers, if you see what I mean.
Perfectly.
Oh, watch out for the cluster of beams, Miss Roberts. They appear to be rather precariously arranged. Oh, my God.
What is that?
Miss Roberts, please, I implore you, don't come any nearer.
What? My poor Morton. What have they done to... Oh.
I've got her.
So you have. You're not in the middle of a scrum, Watson, and there's no need to grip the young lady as ferociously as if someone had just passed it to you on your opponent's 25-yard line.
Do you have some ether in your bag?
Yes, of course, but I wouldn't care to revive her just yet. She's better off out of it, I should think.
Oh, I've never seen such a gruesome sight.
As a medical man and a surgeon, what do you think has been used here?
I have no idea.
Something larger than a scalpel and smaller than an axe. But whatever the weapon was, it has been wielded with absolutely inhuman vigor. Oh, Holmes, what can the fellow have done to deserve such a fate?
Fellows, Watson, look a little more closely. Oh, dear me. What a madhouse.
Since Sarah was able to recognize her brother immediately, we must assume the head belongs to him.
But who the arms, legs, and torso belong to
remains, for the moment, a mystery. But we may be sure of one thing. There are at least 5 other victims involved in this hideous crime.
Excuse me. 6.
6? The head... from one victim, the arms from 2 others, the torso from a 4th, and the legs from the 5th and 6th. Have you observed the corpse has 2 left hands?
By George, so it has.
time now for your vial of ether, Watson. Let us see what we can do about reviving the lovely Miss Sarah Roberts.
As a physician, I must say that I believe she should be allowed to rest. She's had a frightful shock.
Perhaps, but six men have been murdered, Watson. Think how frightfully shocking that must have been for them. Now then, Miss Roberts, if you've sufficiently recovered, perhaps you could answer a few questions. You've told me your brother Morton was a member of an obscure and somewhat ribald school of poetry founded by Mr. Oscar Wilde when he was at Oxford.
Yes.
Holmes, is this really the time?
How many other men were involved in this?
I'm not sure. Perhaps a dozen altogether.
Please name as many as you can.
Well, there was Reggie Cunningham, and a young man everyone called Aldershot. I don't know if that was his first name or his last.
Okay, continue.
Let me think. I remember a short, fat boy named Jimmy Mawson. He seemed to be Mr. Wilde's favorite. Mr. Wilde was always fawning over him, offering him sweets. And there was a tall, red-haired young man, very thin and delicate-looking. His name was Edward something. Yes, that's right. It was Edward Candlemere. Morton used to call him governor behind his back. I don't know why.
Anyone else?
Not that I can remember.
You've done very well. Tell me, were your brother and Oscar Wilde friends, or did they merely have a common artistic interest?
I'm not sure I understand quite what you mean.
I think you do.
Really, Holmes, what are you getting at? Must this inquisition go on forever? Can't you see that the young lady is exhausted?
Just a few more questions, Watson. Well, Miss Roberts?
They were friends, as you put it, yes.
Good friends?
Yes.
Might one even go so far as to suggest that they were intimate friends?
Oh, look here now, Holmes.
My brother was a warm, courageous, and sensitive man.
I'm sure he was. Did you approve of his relationship with Wilde?
I approved of my brother, Mr. Holmes.
I see. Well, Watson, I think it's past time you escorted Miss Roberts back to our Baker Street chambers. Do you really? I shall be staying here for a little while. You needn't feel you have to wait up.
I don't, do I?
Over here, Lestrade!
What the devil? Is that you, Holmes?
Naturally.
You must have blooming sharp eyes to be able to recognize anyone in this muck.
It wasn't you I identified, Inspector. It was your cologne.
Oh, was it now? Very interesting indeed.
If you'll continue to look straight ahead, but bend sharply forward from the waist, I think you'll see why you have been dragged kicking and screaming from your warm feather bed.
What are you talking about?
That.
What in the name of... Constable, give me your light. My God. Whew. You didn't by any chance catch a glimpse of the madman responsible for this slaughter?
I'm afraid it isn't going to be as easy as that, Lestrade. Note the two left hands.
Incredible. Quite incredible.
There are what appear to be metal fragments embedded in the palm of one of the hands. And there is a quantity of stone dust beneath the fingernails of the other. You will have observed that the torso is pale, thin, and decidedly undernourished, each rib casting its own gloomy shadow.
Yes.
The legs, both of them are muscular and thin, and both feet are slightly deformed, despite the fact that they are not a matched pair. I deduce a considerable amount of walking, cheap boots, an insufficient diet, and a shocking lack of personal hygiene. It is therefore obvious that the men represented by these limbs were artists, and typically unsuccessful ones at that. At least two of them were sculptors in stone and metal, according to the evidence. Although I shall want to do a more thorough examination in my laboratory before passing final judgment.
Oh, yes, of course. Here. Hold on a moment. You said dead men? You mean all these pieces don't come from the same person? Oh, the newspapers will have a field day with this, and at my expense. Bits and pieces from six dead men, indeed. Ooh, flesh is uncommonly cold, isn't it?
As cold as the blood that courses through our murderer's veins, Lestrade. But look on the bright side of things. The harder the journalists play upon you now, the better you'll look when I solve the case for you.
Huh. You're going to do me that favor, are you?
Yes, and in return, you must do one for me. Stop wearing that scent.
I beg your pardon?
And now, my friend, I must wish you a pleasant good evening. I'm going to bed, and hopefully to sleep. And then, not quite first thing in the morning, I intend to visit a creature I have always admired, but never hoped to meet.
So good of you to drop by, Mr. Holmes. Is there anything at all I can do?
I should like to have a talk with you.
Where? In here?
Preferably some middle ground. Your drawing room would do nicely. And may I say that I am surprised you know my name.
A friend pointed you out once at the ballet.
I was at the ballet once.
My friend says that a man of my character, or lack of character, would eventually find himself fleeing either towards you or from you. I informed him that the likelihood was that I'd find myself traveling in both directions simultaneously, a consequence of attempting to burn my not particularly brief candle at both ends. Do come in, by the way, now that my neighbors have had time to look you over.
Thank you.
It must be a wonderful thing to be a detective, to have a moral license to snoop into the lives of one's inferiors, eventually dragging the miscreants before the courts of justice, of what we like to think is justice. I must say, I often wonder why our society takes such pleasure in dragging a purse snatcher before a sow's ear.
Mr. Wilde.
Oh, me, Oscar, please. I'd be most gratified. Well, then, what exactly do you want from me? An autograph? An epigram? A glass of sweet sherry?
Last night, in the ruins of a public house near St. Catherine Docks, I came upon a corpse made from the limbs of six dead men.
What? You mean a sort of mixed grill of arms and legs and that sort of thing?
Exactly.
Oh, you've rendered me speechless. Thank God I wasn't a witness to this unnatural event. But tell me, why have you bloodied my doorstep with such gruesome news?
One of the victims is a man named Morton Roberts.
Oh?
You knew him well, did you not?
Better than he knew himself, which was just as well.
What do you mean?
Oh, nothing, really. It was merely quip. Have you any idea who the other men were? Or should I say are? Or should I say nothing but simply remain silent except to call out for my solicitor?
I wouldn't go so far as to suggest that you are under suspicion at the moment, Mr. Wilde.
Really? How charming.
Morton's sister tells me that you and he were at one time engaged upon a similar style of poetry.
Sarah, isn't it? Yes. She kept a very close eye on Morton. I'm afraid she rather disapproved of me.
Lord Candlemere's son, Edward, also wrote poetry, did he not?
Good Lord. You don't mean to suggest that he's been murdered, too?
Except for Morton Roberts, the names of the victims are unknown to me. But can you think of anyone you knew who might have held a grudge against him?
No. Not a soul. Of course, I haven't seen him in years. Life seems to move so rapidly, if somewhat erratically, along, my dear Sherlock. That one circle of awfully good friends is constantly changing, sad to say. A dim, shifting kaleidoscope of warm hellos and frosty, cold goodbyes. Oh, just thinking about it makes me so utterly melancholy and desolate that I can hardly think. Except Perhaps having a bite to eat. Would you like... I don't suppose... Perhaps some other time.
Are you sure you won't have a cup of tea, Holmes? Constable Wilkins makes a rattling good cup.
No, thank you.
Ooh, it's hot.
Yes, it sounds hot.
Well, I don't know how you found out I was about to arrest Mr. Wilde for multiple murder. And I don't suppose it really matters. I imagine someone in the force informed you that I had received an anonymous letter pointing the finger at him. It wasn't Inspector Gregson, was it?
Wilde is innocent.
Oh? Oh, so you say, so you say. But I need a suspect, Holmes. If I don't toss something to the journalists, they're going to keep chewing on me.
That is hardly sufficient reason to arrest the fellow.
Wilde is a known thrill-seeker and debaucher. Anyway, we haven't enough on him to make the arrest quite yet. But we're working on it. Mark my words.
Good evening, Holmes.
Hello, Watson.
Lestrade wants to see you. The constable's been around twice.
I know. I've just come from the yard. The man's an idiot. Tell me, how is Miss Roberts?
Almost fully recovered. The death of her brother has been a terrible shock, but she's young and has a strong constitution.
Yes, very. What's your opinion of her, by the way?
I had never hoped to meet a woman as charming, erudite, and beautiful. Oh, you've no idea how sweet she is, Holmes.
A spoon of sugar for your cup of tea?
Oh, really, Holmes?
I'm sorry, Watson, but I've never in all my life seen you quite so starry-eyed. There's a galaxy swimming around in there, and I'm a trifle concerned that it might affect your ability to see things exactly as they are.
Are you suggesting that Miss Roberts is...
not quite what she appears to be? That description applies to all women everywhere. No, Watson, I am merely suggesting that you try to remember that we really know nothing at all about this young lady.
Speak for yourself. I spent much of last night and all of today with Miss Roberts. I say, please stop looking at me like that. I was at all times acting in a professional capacity. That should go without saying.
Then I wonder why you felt constrained to say it.
Well, look here, Watson.
You must bear in mind the fact that this woman has embroiled us in a most terrible crime. And I have discovered that her relationship with her brother was not as warm as she would have us think.
I don't believe it.
You're not going to open that window, I hope.
Well, despite the firm convictions of my peers, I really cannot see how tobacco can possibly be beneficial to one's health.
Oh, look at the sediment it leaves in the bowl of your pipe. I should think that was the very place for it. Anyway, I'd rather inhale a pinch of honest shag from the toe end of a Persian slipper than the thick yellow fog of London spewed from a million dirty grates.
You're entitled to your opinion of a healthy atmosphere and of Sarah Roberts.
Thank you.
I don't agree with you on either count, but if you insist...
What are you reading? The Soul of Man Under Socialism. By Oscar Wilde.
A lot of tripe, I expect. Wouldn't bother with it if I were you.
Perhaps not. But as Mr. Wilde says, selfishness is not living as one wishes to live. It is asking other people to live as one wishes to live. Now, please try to be quiet. I have a great deal of work to do this evening, and I expect to be up till the wee small hours.
Excuse me, Holmes. I wonder if you'd mind canceling the remainder of your 3 a.m. performance. While it's true that the entire house attends, that attendance is, without exception, involuntary.
I see.
Is there anything the matter?
Yes, Watson. There is one thing I would like to know. And that is, why did the corpse have two left hands?
Do you think that could be significant?
And tell me, why has someone gone to such a lot of trouble to point the cold and lifeless finger of death at Oscar Wilde?
That's two questions, not one.
I congratulate you on your ever-expanding powers of observation, Watson. Although I'm sure the credit for your success should be deposited in my account.
Not Mrs. Hudson, I hope.
Her signature is quieter, but less tentative.
Shall I answer it?
I think, Watson, that this particular call is for me.
Telegram for Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Thank you, my lad.
Are you Mr. Holmes?
Yes, yes.
I was told that I was to give this to Mr. Holmes himself and that no one else would do.
Then let me assure you that tonight at least you shall be able to go to bed with a clear conscience, if not complexion. Now, if you please.
Really, sir, I don't mean to be rude, but if the other gentleman would be willing to speak up on your behalf...
Watson? Eh? Oh, yes, that's him. Sherlock Holmes in the flesh, the original and one and only.
Then there you are, sir, and welcome.
Well, thank you very much indeed, you conscientious little devil. Now, stay exactly where you are, just one moment. I may wish to send a reply.
Awfully sorry, I got a previous. I can't stay.
Boy, stop! Stop! After him, Watson!
I just cannot see a thing.
Neither can I. This damnable fog.
Good Lord, I'm wearing my dressing gown.
No one's going to see you in this suit, Watson. It's as thick as any constable I've met.
I'm afraid we've missed the little rascal. Scampered down the stairs like a water bug, didn't he? Legs going like pinwheels, just a blur.
Are you all right?
Blood in my eyes. Did you hit him?
I doubt it. Let me see your head. Take your hand away. Oh, yes. Flesh wound, nothing more.
If you hadn't pulled me to
life, things probably missed you entirely.
You fired a shot?
Yes, I tried to pick off the driver. The light was very tricky, though. Wouldn't give tuppence for my odds. Listen, are you capable of returning to Baker Street alone?
Why, yes, certainly I think so. Why, where are you off to at this time of night? Can't I come along? I see. Holmes? 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 You're still there?
If you forget your key one more time, I promise you I'll... Oh, you ain't Mr. Ives.
No one is more aware of that than I.
Well, what do you want, then?
To see Miss Sarah Roberts.
What, at this time of night? Look here. She ain't one of those, is she?
One of what?
Well, I mean... having men in at this time of night. She seems such a nice girl.
You said men. Has she had another visitor?
Well, just that other gentleman. The one who calls himself a doctor.
Watson?
Yes, that's the one. Says he's a medical man, but the way he looks at her, well, it seems to me he's the one who's running her temperature.
Well, I wouldn't have Miss Roberts arrested just yet, madam. Dr. Watson is as ethical as you could wish, and my name is Sherlock Holmes.
Never heard of you.
Then I must take it that you do not subscribe to the newspapers. Now, would you be so kind as to inform Miss Roberts that I should like to see her?
At 3 o'clock in the morning?
It is a matter of some urgency. Perhaps this will recompense you in some small part for any inconvenience.
Oh, my word. That's what Mr. Sampson down the street would call a veritable waterfall of wealth. Come in, sir. Come in.
May I have another glass of your wine?
Oh, yes, do. Please. I should very much like to try that as well. You seem to take such pleasure from it.
I'm sorry, Miss Roberts, but I must remain firmly opposed to such an adventure.
Well, I don't see why. It isn't as if I'm not willing to ask you nicely. And in as many ways as you like.
Cocaine is a particularly dangerous drug, young lady. Not suited to everyone by any stretch of the imagination. And my friend Watson insists that there is even the possibility of physical addiction.
But surely it wouldn't hurt to try just a little.
Come now, Miss Roberts. Don't be greedy. I should think one utterly new experience in an evening would be enough for any young woman.
2 hours ago, I would have agreed with you, Mr. Holmes. But now it seems to me that one's appetite for life grows with each moment spent at the table. Can't we just...
Unfortunately, I have an extremely busy day ahead of me, and I must conserve at least a little of my strength for the trials and tribulations that my enemies are no doubt even now strewing across my path. Sure you're all right, Holmes?
Never better.
You look absolutely exhausted. Where were you last night?
Nowhere and everywhere.
I see. And where, pray, are we going now?
Windsome Castle.
And why are we going there?
Really, Watson, so many questions.
Well, if you weren't so unremittingly obtuse...
Windsome Castle is the country home of Lord Candlemere, Watson.
Oh, dear me. Holmes, I fear I must prevail upon our friendship and warn you, both as doctor and friend, that in my opinion, your continued flirtation with that devilishly seductive drug has affected your powers of reason. I mean, the very idea that the son of a member of the upper house could hack up a half a dozen men, it's simply ludicrous. I say... What are you doing?
You can't step outside.
No, of course not. Good heavens, man, why should I want to do such a thing?
Because it would be in character. You seem to jump to conclusions as skillfully and thoughtlessly as a frog skips across a lily pond.
Are you now telling me, then, that the Candlemere boy isn't involved in this bloody mess?
I will say this and nothing more. One doesn't board a steam train with the intention of reaching one's destination before the journey is ended. And as it is with steam trains, so it is with cold-blooded murder.
Think of what you have seen with your eyes and heard with your ears during the past 2 days, Watson. The necessary clues are all there before you, like raisins to be plucked from a bowl of cold porridge. And now, you must excuse me. Last night was particularly exhausting, and if I am to be at my best, I must get some sleep.
Particularly exhausting, was it? Where were you, Holmes? You never did say.
I was in hot pursuit of a rather crucial piece of evidence, Watson. And may I say that I do not take kindly to being cross-examined.
Which one of you is Holmes?
I am Sherlock Holmes, Lord Candlemere. And may I say that you don't seem at all surprised to find me here?
Well, I am. I'm shocked and I'm offended. And if you, sir, are incapable of detecting that, then you have only yourself to blame. Now, what do you want?
I think you know the answer to that question even better than I.
Holmes, really, you embarrass me.
Doctor, has this fellow been drinking?
Lord Candlemere, I can only
say... Perhaps
we could discuss the reason for my presence in the privacy of your library, Lord Candlemere.
Now, look here...
Or must I summon Inspector Lestrade from London?
I have no idea what this is all about, I assure you. But I can see that from Dr. Watson's point of view, it might be best if you were humored, and then perhaps allowed to make your own way back to the city. Come in, gentlemen. Now then, Holmes, rattle away.
Lord Candlemere, I formally accuse you of the murder of Morton Roberts, James Aldershot, Reggie Cunningham, James Mawson, and two other persons as yet unknown. Have you anything to say?
Mr. Holmes, it is crystal clear to me that you've been carried away by your own press. Dr. Watson, do you have a good strong sedative in your bag?
Why, yes, but...
With what?
But Watson has nothing but confidence in my methods. And if I say you are a cold and lifeless slaughterer of men, then he knows it must be so. Shall I tell you how you gave yourself away?
By all means. Let us see this fairy tale through to its conclusion.
Do you recall the scene of the illustrious client, Watson?
All too vividly. In fact, I doubt I shall ever forget it.
Nor I. I recall with particular clarity the severed ends of the various limbs that lay in such a macabre grouping upon the damp and ashy floor. A superficial examination of those limbs revealed that the wounds had been caused by a short, thick knife with a curved blade. Such a weapon is, of course, favored by the Gurkhas. Something you should have known, Watson, from your tour of duty in India.
Yes, of course. I've treated similar wounds.
Lord Candlemere also spent a tour of duty in India. Nepal, wasn't it? And didn't your many duties include commanding a company of Gurkhas?
Yes.
I see.
I take it the knife was a memento.
I know nothing of any knife. My tour of duty in India was extremely unpleasant. I lost a great many dear and valued friends. The very idea of bringing back a memento of that awful span is horribly repugnant to me. And I must say that I strongly resent the fact that you've been prying about in my past.
Quite understandable under the circumstances.
But if that's all the evidence you have, Holmes...
There is also the matter of the courier.
Don't know what you're talking about.
A telegram was delivered to me late last night. The young lad substituted W's for R's, an affectation common only among the upper classes, Lord Candlemere. I take it you recruited the telegraph boy, probably someone who was led to believe he was partaking of a practical joke.
I must congratulate you on your imagination, Holmes, if nothing else.
Watson and I immediately realized that the courier might lead us to the murderer. We chased him down the stairs and into the street. The fog was unusually thick last night, as I am sure that you remember.
I wasn't in London last night. I'm sure the servants will attest to that.
Oh, no doubt. In any case, we chased the courier down a narrow lane.
If it had been any narrower, I might have been killed.
You were waiting at the end of that lane in a two-wheeler from your London stables. That was a serious mistake, using one of your own vehicles. But then I don't suppose the idea of renting one would ever occur to you, would it?
Would you please get to the point, if there is one?
Your coat of arms was painted on the side of the coach. You covered it with lampblack, but the thickening fog condensing on the cold metal sides of the vehicle caused the lampblack to run. As you swept past us, striking Watson a glancing blow and knocking him head over heels into the gutter, I was able to catch a fleeting glimpse of the topmost part of the crest. Just enough of it to identify, actually.
Holmes, I had no idea.
I was also able to get off one quick revolver shot. This morning, I returned to the lane and found a splash of blood on a wall at a height of about 8 feet. That scarf around your neck, does it conceal a wound?
This is preposterous. Well, I have no doubt that you're in hot pursuit of a murderer, but why should you choose to badger me?
Would you rather we badgered your son?
What? Do you mean Edward?
I happen to know that he was for some time a guest in the home of Mr. Oscar Wilde, the playwright, Lord Candlemere. I also understand that you have recently sent the lad abroad against his wishes. I wonder why. And I wonder if you would wish him dragged into this sordid affair?
I knew Edward was involved in something that wasn't quite right. His manner towards me had changed markedly, and he was unable to account for much of his time. One evening, he went out and I followed him. He went to an abandoned warehouse near St. Catherine Docks. His manner was extremely furtive. There was a small door at one end of the building. He knocked three times, paused, and knocked twice more.
A prearranged signal.
A man opened the door. He glanced round to make sure they were unobserved and then let Edward into the building. The door closed behind them, and I heard a series of bolts thud into place. I stood in the shadows for a very long time, listening to the rats scurry about in the dark, trying to think what to do. And in the end, I did nothing.
Not that evening. But you went back there, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I did. Three nights later, I was heavily armed with a pair of pistols and that knife. I still don't know why I took it, though I have thought about it for hours on end.
In any case,
there was a window at the side of the building at eye level. I peered inside and counted six of them.
Including Edward?
My son, no. I'd arranged to meet him at my club, and I'd left a message instructing him to wait.
Pray continue.
I knocked upon the door exactly as my son had done before me. When it swung open, I had a pistol in each hand. The man who opened the door tried to cry out, but I pressed both barrels against his face and pulled the triggers.
My God!
It fell back upon the floor, which was of packed earth. The smoke from my revolvers hung upon the air. For a moment, nothing moved. Then I kicked the door shut behind me and killed them all. They're still there. Buried in that warehouse, if you care to look for them.
You shot all six of them, then?
Only five. The last one ran at me. He had something in his right hand. I don't know what it was. I had no more ammunition. So I pulled the knife from his sheath and slashed at him, nearly severing his head from his body.
That would have been Morton Roberts. Why did you cut up the bodies?
I reasoned that the more savage the attack seemed to be, the less likelihood there was that the search for the murderer would stray outside the realm of the savages.
Savages? Lower classes.
Yes. I still think it was a fine piece of logic.
Why did you send that note to Sarah Roberts?
I fear that she would eventually succeed in interesting the police in the case. I'd intended to murder her had she come to the docks alone.
Of course, of course. But why the two left hands?
The newspapers didn't know what to make of that, did they? And naturally enough, since it meant nothing. I intended to provide the corpse with the left and right hand, but in the horror of the moment, I hacked off two lefts. Well, anyone can make a mistake, can't they?
Then, you murdered those six men because you mistakenly believed them to be sexually deviant rather than because of their politics.
Politics? What politics?
I have good news for you. Your son's relationship with Wilde was a consequence solely of their common interest in poetry and radical politics.
No, I don't believe you.
Edward is an anarchist, as were the men you killed.
Anarchists? Are you sure?
The rock dust I found under the fingernails of the corpse proved upon further examination to be granules of blasting powder, Watson. The metal filings embedded in the palm of the corpse's other hand obviously came from the shell casing of a bomb. But despite the odious vocation of your victims, Lord Candlemere, I doubt you will find a sympathetic public.
You wouldn't dare make this revelation a matter of public record? Expose an affair of this sort to the masses, and you'd risk shredding the delicate fabric of British society. None of us could say what might happen. We'd be playing right into the anarchist's hands.
I agree. And that is why we three must quietly take justice into our own hands.
Oh, I say, Holmes.
Here, today, in this very room. Lord Candlemere, in my opinion, there is no way you can adequately expiate your sins. However, there are three things that you can do. To begin with, you must make a check out to Miss Sarah Roberts in the sum of £21,000.
How did you arrive at that amount?
It struck me as being a nice round figure.
Oh, I see. Anything else?
Another check, this time to the workhouses of London, in a sum of £79,000. That's £100,000 altogether, another nice round figure.
You're asking me to pay penance to the tune of damn near £17,000 per man.
A fortune, I agree. But this, I promise you, you'll never miss a penny of it.
What do you mean? Why not?
There is a third condition to my continued silence in this matter. After Lord Candlemere has finished with his checkbook and his gold-nibbed pen, I want him to do something about cleaning his gun collection. Carelessly.
Oh, dear me.
Have I no choice?
Certainly, you have a choice. But after a moment's reflection, I am sure you'll agree it would be much better were the press to find you slumped over a table in your gun room than across the prisoner's dock at the Old Bailey. After all, it's the very fabric of British society that's hanging in the balance. Is it not?
Public by being just a little less punctual. I don't know how they manage it, but their trains always seem to arrive late and leave exactly on time. It's a nuisance, don't you agree?
What time is it, Watson?
10 minutes past the hour. I imagine he's done it by now.
Yes, I would think he has.
Look here, Holmes. Do you mind if I ask you a rather personal question?
For the benefit of your reading public?
No. This is personal. I should like to know where you and I stand on a certain matter.
Then speak up, by all means. What is it?
I
I find Miss Roberts extremely attractive, and I wondered if... Well, I simply wondered how you felt about her.
There is no denying that Miss Roberts is an extremely attractive woman. There is something about her, a certain innocence.
Has she?
Don't misunderstand me, Watson. My appreciation of Miss Roberts' charms is entirely objective. I admire her as I would admire a painting hung upon a wall, but I have no desire whatsoever to possess her, if that is what you mean.
More or less. But you're quite sure?
Watson, I'm beginning to suspect an infatuation. By the way, give her this check and advise her to cash it promptly today, if at all possible.
Oh, I thought you'd want to give it to her yourself.
I have more pressing business to attend to. I believe I owe it to English literature and the reading public to warn Mr. Oscar Wilde of the folly of his ways. Perhaps familiarize him with Section 11 of the Criminal Code Amendment Act.
I see.
No doubt my kindness will prove a waste of time. Wilde is a known voluptuary whose addiction to satiety will, doubtless, eventually require him to taste the ultimate sensation of ruin.
But still, it is a task which must be undertaken.
Precisely, Watson. Precisely.
Left-Handed Corpse starred Christopher Newton as Sherlock Holmes, Leon Connell as Dr. Watson, Peter Brockington as Oscar Wilde, Marion Eisman as Sarah, and Jack Ammon as Lestrade. Also appearing were Anthony Holland as Lord Candlemere, Barbara Tremaine as the Landlady, Shirley Broderick as Mrs. Hudson, and Charlie Higgins as the Courier Boy. The engineer was Jerry Stanley with sound effects by Jay Hirene. The music was composed and conducted by Bruce Riddell. The Adventure of the Left-Handed Corpse was produced and directed in Vancouver by Robert Chesterman. Next week on Sunday Matinee, join us for With My Eyes Wide Open.